Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and check us out on Instagram, instagram.com/greatdetectives. If you're enjoying the podcast, be sure and follow us using your favorite podcast software. And if you're making travel plans, remember JohnnyDollarAir.com. JohnnyDollarAir.com is our Priceline affiliate link. So if you purchase through there, part of your purchase price benefits the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio at no additional cost to you. Well, now we're going to get into this week's episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, which I believe, with some controversy, we'll talk after the episode about, is the first episode of the half-hour run. So from November 11th, 1956, here now is The Big Scoop Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Joe McNabb, Northeast Indemnity, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Joe. What's up?
At the moment, my blood pressure.
Too much work?
No. Prospect of having to pay off on a $100,000 life insurance policy.
Uh-oh.
Fella, I think you know Johnny, Art Wesley.
Oh, sure. Been a pal of mine for years. Reporter.
Yeah. Apparently, he's working on a story right now that somebody doesn't want him to report.
What do you mean?
Night before last, he got beat up in an alley. Yesterday, a car made a pass at him at high speed.
What about today?
It's early yet, Johnny.
Oh, yeah, sure. But let's hope it's not too late.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office Northeast Indemnity Affiliates, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Big Scoop matter. Expense account item one, $18.40. Transportation and incidentals to New York City. I called Art Wesley's paper. He wasn't in and nobody seemed to know where he was. Then I remembered a small bar called Tony's over on 3rd Avenue. I took a cab, that's item two, $1.25, and found him in a corner booth.
Sorry, Johnny, no bodyguard. The informants I'm working with will take off fast if they spotted one. No informants, no story.
That insurance policy your paper took out on you. Who's the beneficiary?
A dear departed wife, Joan.
Departed? I thought...
We split up a couple of months ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Art.
Yeah, we were living in two different worlds. I wanted a home and family. She wanted a trip to the moon every night.
Where is she now?
Who knows? On her way to the moon, I guess.
Hey, look, this story you're working on, Art.
It's hot, Johnny. And big, real big. A national gambling syndicate, and run by a guy right here in New York.
Who?
I'm getting close, but I'm not sure yet. When I am, then out come my articles.
What's this guy gonna do when you push him into a corner? Look, I'm worried about you.
You look, Johnny, I'm not as foolish as you think. I've got his name written down and put in a safe deposit box with what evidence I got. That's my real insurance.
Oh, all right, look, we've been friends a long time. I'm not gonna let you do this alone.
Sorry, Johnny. I gotta go it alone.
Since I'd gotten nowhere with Art, I decided to try his wife, Joan, even though they were separated. I found her in an apartment on East 68th, but she was hardly what you'd call cooperative.
Look, Mr. Dollar, so you're a friend of Art's. At the moment, I'm not.
Mrs. Wesley, your marriage with Art is none of my business. But that insurance policy his paper took out on him is. And incidentally, you're still the beneficiary.
So?
So he could be in danger, those articles he's writing.
Why doesn't he drop it?
Oh, look, you know Art better than that.
Then what am I supposed to do about it? That story is his business. How I feel about things is my business. And come to think of it, I can't see that either of those things is your business.
Item three, $1.80, cab fare to police headquarters in the office of my old friend, Detective Lieutenant Rastelli.
Sure, I know about those attempts on Art's life. So I talked to him and got nowhere.
He told me the stories about a national gambling syndicate.
It's more than he told me.
Supposedly the big boss is here in New York. Now, what are you going to do about it?
Look, the minute Art quits thinking he's got to hit the jackpot all by himself and lets us in on it, we'll give him all the protection he... Lieutenant Rustelli. Yeah, just a minute. It's for you, Johnny.
Oh, thanks. Hello?
Art Wesley, Johnny. They told me at your hotel where to reach you.
Anything new, Art?
I'm leaving town for a few hours. This could be it, Johnny. Tonight could be the jackpot.
Well, listen, let me go with you.
Sorry, I gotta go alone. It's part of the deal.
Art, it could be a trap.
I can take care of myself. Call you when I get back. Wish me luck.
Well, look, wait. Art! Art! Item 4, $1.80 cab to Art's apartment, where I persuaded the manager to let me in. I was looking for anything that would give me a lead. Then, near the phone, on a scratch pad, I found where he'd written the word Watika several times. Sure, Lake Watika, upstate. Art had a lodge there. Item 5, $25 even for a rented car. It was a 3-hour drive to Lake Watika, which was bad enough. But to top it off, it started to rain, and rain hard. When I finally got to the highway turnoff, the side road to the lake was a mass of mud. Then I got 2 quick breaks. It stopped raining, and I spotted the 6-mile road into Art's place. Half an hour further on, I saw a light. Art's car was parked at one side, and the front door of the lodge was wide open. When I got to it, I saw why. Art was lying in the doorway. Yeah. He was the one who wanted to hit the jackpot. But you can't hit the jackpot with a slug, particularly when that slug is right between your eyes. I drove to the sheriff's office and reported it. Sheriff Tompkins and his boys took over. But in the darkness and the mud, they could only make a routine check. He asked me to meet him at the lodge the next morning, so I did.
Buddy was right here in the doorway, huh, son?
Yeah, Sheriff, I didn't move it.
And Wesley probably got shot when he answered the door by somebody standing out there on the ground.
Because of that bullet hole in the roof?
Yeah. Right over that shelf that's stocked with canned goods, sugar, salt, and the like. Apparently, he used this place regular.
Yeah, he used to do some of his writing here. Were you able to determine time of death?
Coroner says between 10:30 and 11 last night. What time did you arrive?
About half an hour after the rain stopped. I'd say 11:45.
Means it was still raining a good half hour after the killing. Yeah, no wonder we found no tracks.
Hey, look, Sheriff. Art was working on a hot story about a national gambling syndicate. Could be that he found out who the boss was last night, the hard way.
Oh? Then you think the killer was from out of town? Maybe New York?
Yeah. Now, where would he stay? Is there a hotel around here?
Lake Watika Inn? Just outside the village, about 6 miles from here.
Sheriff, I'll check it out.
The guests here at the inn, Mr. Dollar? Well, we have only 2 who checked in yesterday. It's the off-season, of course.
Yeah, clerk, who are they?
Well, Mr. Cooper yesterday afternoon and a Mr. Buckley around dark.
Uh-huh. Are they still here?
Mr. Cooper is sitting right out there on the terrace, but Mr. Buckley paid in advance and left quite early this morning.
I see. Did Buckley give any reason for stopping here?
He said he was a traveling man and didn't like to drive in the rain.
Okay. I'd like you to write down a description of him. I'll pick it up on the way out.
Oh, I'll be glad to, sir.
Hi.
Oh, good morning.
Enjoying the scenery?
Yes, immensely. Oh, sit down, won't you?
Sure, thanks. My name's Dollar.
Mine's Cooper. You just check in?
I'll just drop by.
I came yesterday.
Uh-huh. Pretty up here this time of year.
Yes. Yes, certainly is. I really enjoy places like this in the off-season. It's a nice change.
Too bad the weather hasn't been better, huh?
Well, the rainstorm last night? Oh, I enjoyed that, too.
You were out in it?
Oh, no. No. No, I enjoyed it the way a storm should be enjoyed. In front of the fireplace in my cottage with a drink and a good book. No, Mr. Dollar, I stayed in last night.
And that was that.
I picked up the description of the other guest, Buckley, from the clerk and gave it to Sheriff Tompkins, who got out a bulletin on him. Then I drove back to New York City, turned in my rented car, and took a cab, that's item 6, $1.70, to Joan Wesley's apartment.
Yes. They notified me this morning about Art's death. I don't know what to say. What is there to say?
Good question, Mrs. Wesley.
If only he hadn't been so stubborn. If only he'd given up that story about the gambling syndicate or whatever it was.
Yeah. You figure somebody in the syndicate killed him?
Why, of course.
Mrs. Wesley, did you know Art had gone on up to the lodge at Lake Watika?
No. Mr. Dollar, I'm rather tired.
One more thing. Did you go out last night?
No. It was raining. I stayed here in the apartment.
All evening?
All evening.
I see. Well, thanks, Mrs. Wesley. Maybe I was imagining, but it seemed to me Joan Wesley hesitated just a little before telling me she hadn't been out of her apartment last night. And if she had gone to Lake Watika, I checked the basement garage. Her car was clean. Too clean. Item 7, $5 to the garage attendant for some very interesting information. Joan Wesley had ordered her car washed first thing this morning. Why? Because the wheels were covered with mud from last night.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Better schools mean better citizens, better neighbors, better families. But we can't expect our children to respond, to learn and grow, if we ourselves are indifferent to their school environment. CBS Radio urges that you write to Better Schools, 9 East 40th Street, New York 16, New York, for information about how citizens can spark community action to improve their schools. That address again is Better Schools, 9 East 40th Street, New York 16, New York. Now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Big Scoop Matter.
I tell you, I didn't leave this apartment last night.
Your car says differently, Joan.
Car.
You had it washed today because it was all muddy. And the reason it was muddy was because you had it out in the rain last night.
Look,
another thing. You told me you didn't know Art had gone to the lodge. You hadn't heard from him. But the switchboard operator told me you had a call from him yesterday. Now, why else would he call you except to tell you where he was going? Well, how about it, Joan?
All right. Art did call me yesterday and told me he was going to Lake Watika.
And how about last night?
Yes. I went out, but not to Lake Watika.
Art wouldn't give you a divorce. By killing him, you get your freedom and $100,000.
I didn't kill Art. I didn't go up there last night.
And where did you go?
Might as well know. The reason I wanted a divorce from Art was because I'd found someone else.
Oh?
That's where I went for a few minutes last evening.
Why did you lie about the phone call from Art yesterday?
I don't know. I was confused. I was afraid it would look bad for me if it came out that I knew Art had gone up there.
It doesn't look good for you this way, believe me.
Oh, Johnny, I'm telling the truth.
Who is this fella you're interested in?
I don't see why he
Who is he?
His name is Ted Nash. Will you have to talk to him?
I sure will. And right now. But I was wrong about talking to Ted Nash right now. I called his apartment and got no answer. Item 9, $1.60, cab fare to police headquarters in the office of Detective Lieutenant Rastelli.
You figure this guy Nash and Joan Wesley could have killed Art and used a gambling syndicate threat as a cover, huh?
It's a possibility, Lieutenant.
Well, I'll see what I can find out about Nash. How'd you do at Lake Watika?
Two guests checked in the day of the killing. One, a man named Buckley. He left early this morning. Sheriff Tompkins has a bulletin out on him.
Who else?
A fellow named Cooper, who apparently likes to go places in the off-season. Nothing to tie him in particularly.
Cooper, huh? We had a rumble some time ago that a guy named Cooper was involved in that gambling syndicate.
What?
Trouble is, we got no proof.
Hey, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Art told me he'd put the name of the man he was after in a safe deposit box. If we could find the key to that box.
How about Art's apartment?
Let's take a look. So we looked, and we found the key tucked away in a desk, but only a number on it. Nothing to tell where it was located. I gave it to Lieutenant Rastelli, and he promised to check every bank in town if necessary. While I went on back to Lake Watika to see if the man named Cooper at the inn was the same one Rastelli told me about. When I got there, after a frantic 3-hour drive, I found him comfortably sitting by the fireplace.
Well, Mr. Dollar, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Cooper, I want to get right to the point. You told me you came up here to enjoy the scenery.
Yes, that's right. Why?
The man who was killed last night, Art Wesley. He was trying to expose a national gambling syndicate.
Oh, that's very interesting. So?
So, I know a police detective in New York who thinks you're a member of that syndicate.
Well, now, Mr. Dollar, that's a very serious charge. I presume you have proof. Well? No proof. Well, in that case, I don't
Mr.
think there's
Dollar,
any...
Mr. Dollar, long-distance call for you. You can take it on that phone right beside you.
Thanks, clerk. Johnny Dollar.
Rastelli in New York, Johnny.
Hi, Lieutenant. You locate that...
Yeah, the safe deposit box. And in it, we found the name of the man Art Wesley was closing in on. It's Cooper.
Thanks very
right,
much. Well, Cooper, you wanted proof? We've got it. Evidence that ties you in with the syndicate. Clerk!
Well, now, this is ridiculous,
is
Dollar.
It? Let me tell you the facts about this thing.
Is something the matter, Mr. Dollar?
Get Sheriff Tompkins on the phone, clerk. Tell him I've got Art Wesley's killer here.
You mean Mr. Cooper?
Oh, now, wait a minute. Now, look, Dollar. If you'd get your facts straight, you'd drop this silly notion of yours.
What kind of facts, Cooper?
What time was Wesley killed?
Between 10:30 and 11 last night.
But, Mr. Dollar, Mr. Wesley's place is some 6 miles from here.
That's right. Why?
Well, then Mr. Cooper couldn't have killed him.
What do you mean?
Last night, I took a drink to Mr. Cooper's cottage here at the inn.
What time?
Around 20 to 11, and I chatted with him for at least 15 minutes.
Are you sure about that?
Oh, quite sure.
Well, Mr. Dollar, I'll buy you a drink sometime.
Cooper strolled back to the bar with a satisfied smirk on his face. So the one man who had to be Art's killer couldn't have killed him. I collared the clerk again and had him repeat his story in detail.
If you recall, it rained heavily last night, Mr. Dollar.
Yes, yes, I drove through it on my way up here.
Well, I was making the rounds of the inn, checking windows, things like that, when the house phone rang. It was Mr. Cooper calling from his cottage. He wanted a drink.
You say that was at 20 to 11?
Yes, I always jot down the time when I am called away from the desk.
All right, go on, go on.
Well, when I got to Mr. Cooper's cottage, he was sitting in the living room in front of the fire with a book.
Yeah.
We chatted a while, and then when I returned here to the desk, I jotted down the time again. 10:55.
Well, that does it.
What do you mean?
Oh, it's a good 20-minute drive from here to Art Wesley's lodge. If he was killed between 10:30 and 11, and Cooper was here at that time, he couldn't have done it.
Well, I'm sorry, but facts are facts. And, oh, excuse me. Lake Watika Inn. Yes, just a moment. Sheriff Tompkins, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, thanks. Hi, Sheriff.
Thought you ought to know, son. Remember that man Buckley we were looking for?
Yeah, sure, the other guest at the inn.
Yeah, we picked him up. I've been questioning him for an hour.
Any luck?
No, sir. He's just a traveling salesman who stayed at the inn because he didn't want to drive in the rain.
You sure?
Buckley swears he doesn't even know Cooper. Just between you and me, Johnny, I think we got the wrong fella.
No place again. I decided to start all over. Got into my car and drove to Art Wesley's place. Nothing was changed. I remember the trip I'd made the night he was killed, how it rained heavily until about half an hour before I arrived. How I'd found him lying in the open doorway, a bullet hole in his head. Yeah, and the hole in the ceiling over the shelf of provisions marking the path of the bullet. It was there. So were the provisions. Canned food, mustard, sugar, a package of crackers. There was some... Wait a minute. Sugar. The sugar bowl. I stared at it for a moment. I remembered a couple of things the room clerk at the inn had told me. And suddenly the whole deal slid neatly and quietly into place. I drove back to the inn fast. Cooper's cottage was empty, so I went inside to the bedroom and took a look around. Then I spotted one of the pictures on the wall, a little out of place. I looked behind it. Yeah, just what I expected. Outside, I found Cooper sitting on the terrace in front of the main building. I slid into a chair across from him.
Well, Mr. Dollar, what fantastic crime are you going to accuse me of today?
Cooper, I got a one-track mind, and it's still stuck on murder.
Oh, now look, Dollar, we've been over this before, and personally, I find it quite boring. So much so that it's interfering with my vacation here.
That's too bad.
Yes, it is. So I'm leaving this evening.
I don't think so, Cooper.
Oh, come now.
Art Wesley was trying to expose a figure in a gambling syndicate. You.
Well, that's a matter of conjecture.
You had to stop him for keeps.
Oh, now look, Dollar. The time of Art Wesley's death has been established as between 10:30 and 11 last night.
That's right, between 10:30 and 11 last night.
And I'm sure you remember the room clerk telling you he was with me in my cottage living room from 10:40 to 10:55.
I sure do.
So that I certainly couldn't have killed your friend Wesley 6 miles from here during that time.
Except that Art Wesley wasn't killed at his lodge.
What are you talking about?
You see, I remembered something else the clerk had told me. The night of the killing, it stopped raining a little after 11.
All right, what difference does that make?
All the difference in the world, believe me. Here's what really happened, Cooper. You killed Art Wesley in the bedroom of your cottage here at the inn.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
You immediately called the room clerk over and chatted with him in your living room for about 15 minutes. He didn't know there was a corpse in the next room.
Oh, really?
After he left, you took Wesley's body the 6 miles to his place and planted it in the doorway.
Oh, now, look, Dollar...
Your problem was to make it look like he'd been killed there. Then you remembered. The slug that had killed him hit the wall in your bedroom. That gave you an idea. You figured out the right angle at the lodge and fired a shot upwards from the outside the door. It went through the ceiling at the back.
All right, Dollar, I've had enough of your half-baked theories with no proof whatsoever to back them up.
Correction, Cooper. This time I've got proof. There was a shelf of food under the bullet hole and a bowl of sugar directly under it.
A bowl of... So what?
When sugar gets wet, it gets crusty and it stays that way. But the sugar in that bowl was dry. Now, if the killing was between 10:30 and 11 and it rained heavily until after 11, then some rain would have dropped through the bullet hole into the sugar.
I see.
But, Cooper, the sugar was dry. So the bullet hole was made after the time of the murder when you planted Wesley's body there. Just a little detail, Cooper, but it nails you. That and, of course, the fact I found the slug that really killed Wesley just a couple of minutes ago.
Oh.
Buried in the wall of your bedroom behind a picture you'd moved slightly to cover it.
Well, Dollar, I may as well tell you that I saw you come out of my cottage a few minutes ago. I figured you knew. So ever since you sat down here, I've been holding a gun on you under the table.
You know, Cooper, I may as well tell you. Ever since I sat down here, I've been holding a gun on you, too.
Were you...
Let's have it.
Well, you... You didn't have any gun.
A big-time gambler bluffed right out of the game. Cooper, you're slipping. Item 10, 3750, transportation and incidentals back to Hartford. Expense account total $187.40. Remarks? Cooper's awaiting trial. About Art Wesley... Well, I guess that sugar bowl was a dead man's revenge. And come to think of it, that revenge was pretty sweet. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. In days long since gone by, one had to go out in search of derring do. But in a fast-moving world, exciting things are happening right around the clock. Things you can be in on no matter what else you're doing, as long as your radio is nearby. With CBS Newsmen on the job, you can make CBS Radio your listening post for world events. Stay tuned now for 5 minutes of CBS News, to be followed over most of these same stations by the FBI in peace and war. Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, colorful New Orleans, from nightlife in the Latin Quarter to the dismal, deadly swamps. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. Written by Robert Reif, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in tonight's cast were Virginia Gregg, Russell Thorson, Barney Phillips, Stacey Harris, Larry Thor, Parley Bear, and Les Tremaine. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Dan Cumberly speaking.
Welcome back. A solid mystery in typical Robert Reich fashion with one big clue and fisticuffs at the end. Larry Thor only had one scene, but boy, he defined the character with a classic bit of sadness and world weariness that he just played so perfectly, and of course we'll hear that in a few months on Broadway Is My Beat. I do wonder whether his wife's taste for the party lifestyle is why he was willing to do this investigation this way. Because it seems to me like the inclination, I want to have a family and let me take on this syndicate without a bodyguard or backup, that's just contradictory. I also wonder whether if Art hadn't been Johnny's friend, whether Johnny would have tried to bring pressure on him or the paper to have him cooperate. Being Johnny's friend may have actually allowed Art to be killed. As John Abbott noted in his book, the character of Lieutenant Ristelli was a character from the Imperfect Alibi Matter serial that we played a few weeks back. Now, I should note that there's a bit of a disagreement on the order of this story and whether it's truly the first of the half-hour episodes. The next episode we're going to play, The Markham Matter, has a script dated November the 4th that John Abbott discovered. But it has also been dated by researchers as November 18th due to its Thanksgiving reference. Both this week's show and the Markham Matter contain a reference to next week's show being in New Orleans, which actually would be the Royal Street Matter, which aired on November 25th of 1956. I ultimately decided that this one, which incontrovertibly aired on November the 11th of 1956, was actually the first episode. The big things that argue against that is that the last episode of the serial era was November the 2nd, and it promised to start airing episodes on Sunday. I think created a bit of confusion. The idea that right after finishing the serial episodes, we're going to start into the half-hour series seemed, perhaps it was too ambitious as well. There were quite a few CBS stations across the country that actually ended up playing Johnny Dollar on Saturday for various reasons. So it seems believable to me that the Markham Matter may have been initially intended for November 4th and then the Royal Street Matter for November 11th, but it just couldn't come together. And you'll recall back at the start of the serial era, there was kind of a bit of a bumpy start period where one serial would be listed, but you'd end up getting another instead because of production delays and tight time frame. So I think that the Markham Matter was intended for November 4th, but they just couldn't pull it off. Whether the script wasn't done or something else had come up. And so We got the big scoop matter to start things off, then the Markham matter on the 18th, and then the Royal Street matter was finally ready to go on November 25th. The things that argue for that, in my mind, are one, the inclusion of the Thanksgiving message, which makes no sense at all on November the 4th. And then there's also the fact that there's not a script out there that's purported to be from November 18th. So if the Markham matter was on November the 4th, what was on the 18th? I also found a newspaper log from the Concord Monitor indicating that the Markham matter was the Johnny Dollar episode that aired that weekend. So I'm pretty confident. The bad news is, if you were looking forward to a return to New Orleans, you've got a couple weeks to wait. Listener comments and feedback now, and we go to some listener comments regarding some of our Yours Truly Johnny Dollar episodes. We start with Lawrence, who emails in regarding the Silent Queen matter. Hi, Adam. I find your latest installment of Johnny Dollar interesting as it centers around Venice, California, and their description of the area during that period. One of my favorite actors lived his last days in a cheap hotel in that town, dying with only around $13 to his name. The actor was Tom Conway. Listeners to radio might remember him as taking the role of Sherlock Holmes when Basil Rathbone left the show. He also portrayed Simon Templar, a.k.a. the Saint, after Vincent Price as well. In addition, he is best remembered on film for taking over the role of the Falcon from his more well-known and successful actor brother, George Sanders. I guess, being a detective fan, I especially like him because he portrayed so many sleuths throughout his career. Near the end of his career, doing television with the character Mark Saber. I don't know if you've shown any of these, the very few there are, in your video podcast. Keep up the fine work you do. Well, thanks so much, Lawrence. I haven't been able to find out if those are in the public domain. And Conway definitely had a rough time of it towards the end of his life. He estimated he'd earned $900,000 in his career, but had lost it, including $15,000 to swindlers. He did actually make it out of Venice after being hospitalized and going to a sanitarium, and was able to very briefly move into a still modest, but not quite as bad apartment on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles before he passed. But still an incredible body of work. I've been meaning to start watching the Falcon films, but I've been just so busy, I haven't had much time for extra viewing. Then we have some comments regarding the Phantom Chase matter. And we start with an email from Jason, who writes, "Just wanted to thank you for a great podcast series. After listening to Johnny's remarks at the end of the 2-week Phantom Chase series, I would think that Johnny would be on the outs with Pat McCracken. I don't know what the 1956 version was of the phrase, sick burn dude, but I feel it would have applied here." Well, thanks so much, Jason. I'm not sure what the equivalent would be either. No phrase really comes to mind. And when I did a Google search for sick burn 1956, Fahrenheit 451 came up, which I admit is a book about sick people burning books, but not exactly what we had in mind. And of course, Johnny's remark was, "Pat, the next time you call me for an assignment like this one, I hope you get a busy signal." Which is rough, but it's just Johnny blowing off steam. And he is at such a level in his profession that you just kind of shrug if you're running an insurance office. Because you know in a few weeks or months, you're going to have a case that you're going to want to bring in the best possible investigator over. Then we have a comment from Spotify And Stacy writes, the Barbados accent of the fishermen is inaccurate. I know for the era, they are not focused on accuracy. It is neat that they use a variety of locations. Thank you. I enjoy listening to Johnny Dollar. Well, thank you so much for the comment, Stacy. And I think you're right. In modern acting, there is a greater focus and also a greater ability to get various accents correct. I listen to the modern Big Finish audio dramas, and they have extras where actors talk about their work. And sometimes you'll have these actors taking on accents that they are not necessarily familiar with. And before they do that, they use YouTube to pull up a native speaker speaking in that accent to kind of gather how that works and to really work through and acquire the skills needed to give a good performance. You didn't quite have that ease of access. You would need to have background, and it was just not as easy, and audiences wouldn't necessarily demand it. And I should say, it's not just American radio dramas that had this problem. Yeah, we've heard some of these Australian dramas, which are supposed to be set in the United States, and their ideas of what a believable American accent sounds like. And whenever you're listening to a British audio drama or even watching a British television series of a certain age, and I'm talking, you know, into the 80s, whenever you hear a character say, oh yes, here's this American gentleman, you just kind of brace yourself for what's going to come next. So it was a international phenomenon, and I think we are getting to a point with technology and with our ability to more quickly connect around the world to have more believable performances and accents and less things that sound silly. Even though it's just actors in the 1950s doing what audiences expected at the time. Speaking of accents, we also have a comment regarding the same story from off the website. Elwood writes, thank you for keeping these dramas alive. Your commentary brings very helpful context to the dramas. I do have a question I am curious about. Whenever Johnny gets to the South, such as in this story, locals have Southern accents, but New Englanders rarely do. In the Meg's Palace matter, Meg has an Irish accent. Captain Billy and one of his crew have British accents, and everyone else had general American accents. No one had a New England accent. Was it just that most Americans at the time were more familiar with Southern accents than New England accents? Well, thanks so much for the comment, Elwood. I would say that it's not always the case that the New England accent isn't done. I would refer you to the Shading Lane matter. In that one, you had a lot of, at least attempts at New England accents with Jed, the constable, you know, really having a good one. I do think that there was more familiarity with the New England accent, and you hear it a lot more in New York-based programs just because they're closer. But that doesn't mean that it's never used. I do think that in the case of the Meg's Palace matter, there was no reason for Billy or for Meg to have a New England accent. Billy, of course, was a man of the sea and not native there, and the same was true of his man. We'll also say that in addition to the British guy, you also had, I believe, a Swedish person in Captain Billy's crew. So from a practical standpoint, you may have just had enough accents, and not every actor is going to be comfortable doing a dialect role, even at a time when, as I said before, people were a lot more forgiving about being inaccurate with a dialect. So I think in that case, just the uniqueness of it being a port and already having a couple, you know, I think three different dialects in the episode already that they didn't throw in a New England dialect as well. Thanks so much for the comment. And then on YouTube, Dave says of the Phantom Chase matter, makes my day. Thanks. Well, thank you so much, Dave. Now it's time to thank our Patreon supporter of the day. I want to go ahead and thank Judith. Judith has been one of our Patreon supporters since May of 2021, currently supporting the podcast at the Seamus level of $4 or more per month. Thank you so much for your support, Judith. And that will do it for today. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow us using your favorite podcast software. And be sure to rate and review the podcast wherever you download it from. We will be back next Friday with another episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. But join us back here tomorrow for Dragnet, where...
She took my wallet, watch, car keys, everything I had.
Mm-hmm.
And she made me get out of the car, lay down on the street. I felt to shove that gun again. Can you fix that pillow?
Yeah, you bet. Just lie still. There you are.
I felt to shove that gun against me, and then she pulled the trigger, I guess. That's all I remember.
You don't recall her slugging you?
Must have happened after she shot me. Her face looks pretty bad, huh?
You'll be all right, Mr. Maloney. You think you'd recognize the girl if you saw her again?
I sure would. Nice looking, you know. Tall, blonde, beautiful shape. Doesn't figure, does it?
What's that?
She'd make more money on the stage than she would rolling guys like me.
I hope you'll be with us then. In the meantime, send your comments to box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and check us out on Instagram. Instagram.com/greatdetectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.